Coming up, pilots, pastors, and hundreds of volunteers in South Florida helping the Haitian earthquake survivors.
What we've seen here in the last week is the church. The Christians on the front line. That's where we should be.
And in India, modern ideas and comforts alongside ancient and adaptable Hindu practices.
There is no word in any Indian language which is a synonym of religion.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome. I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. The news from Haiti remains grim. Officials are estimating the earthquake killed 200,000 people and left some 2 million homeless. The UN humanitarian chief said 3 million people have been affected. Foreign governments have pledged $1 billion for recovery, but logistical problems on the ground are preventing much of the aid from reaching the most vulnerable. The U.S. has sent in thousands of troops to try to help coordinate the relief effort. The U.N. is trying to take the lead in a country that now has a barely functioning government and where many religious institutions have been destroyed. But the U.N., like other humanitarian and religious groups, is still recovering from its own losses. At a special memorial service for the dozens of U.N. workers killed by the earthquake, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called it the gravest single tragedy in the organization's history. People around the world have responded with an outpouring of donations. Americans have pledged hundreds of millions of dollars. At the Haitian embassy in Washington this past weekend, workers were inundated with bags of clothes and supplies. One of the busiest centers of aid is in South Florida, which has one of the largest concentrations of Haitians in the country. Kim Lawton reports that church officials and faith-based volunteers are working tirelessly to provide food and medical supplies. They're also grappling with the often asked question, why did God let the earthquake happen?
At a small airport in Fort Pierce, Florida, a Christian aviation ministry called Missionary Flights International has been working around the clock, trying to get desperately needed help into Haiti. Hundreds of volunteers from local churches are sorting and packing donations that have come in from across the U.S., from food and water to medical supplies, clothes, and even fuel. And MFI pilots are flying in the cargo and emergency personnel as fast as they can.
It's a great feeling, you know. Most people like to help each other, and we found that here. It's just amazing the things that's come together here. People want to help do something, and you find out what they do and what they can do, and pretty soon you've got a job for them.
For more than 40 years, Missionary Flights International has been providing air support to missionaries and church personnel on the ground in Haiti and other Caribbean nations. They regularly fly in mail and supplies and help transport personnel. Since the earthquake, they've been in all-out crisis mode.
Because we are well known by all the mission communities and all the churches that support these missionaries down in Haiti, they know that this is the place to call and to locate. So it's not like somebody has to figure out who to call and what to do. They already know.
And MFI has been well positioned to respond. Because of the type of planes they fly, they're landing on a smaller air ramp in Port-au-Prince, avoiding the massive backup of military and other humanitarian planes on the airport's main runway. And they say their long-standing local connections make them especially efficient in delivering the aid.
We also have a network of missions in Haiti that is distributing it for us. So our stuff gets out to where it needs to go. It's not being held. It's out within a few hours after we get it down there.
For days now, people wanting to help Haiti have been lining up outside MFI's hangar, hoping to get a spot for themselves and their relief aid. Haitian-born Israel Francois and a team from his Hollywood, Florida church were among them.
Definitely, it makes a big difference. Personal touch, just letting people know that we care. It's one thing to say, but it's one thing to go there and say, we're in this with you. It's a calling for me. It's a, you know, God called me to do this, and I'm going to do it.
On their return trips, MFI pilots have been bringing people out of Haiti, including injured earthquake victims and evacuated missionaries, and on some occasions, Haitian orphans. For 3 years, Brian and Karen Patterson from Omaha have been in the process of adopting two little girls from Haiti. After the earthquake, they were terrified about the girls' fate.
The phones were down for the first day, and so it took quite a while before we even found out whether they were okay, so that was good news.
Then, with less than a day's notice, they learned that the adoptions had been expedited. 3-year-old Carlina arrived in Florida Tuesday, with her sister soon to follow. Missionary Barbara Walker brought Carlina and several other children from their orphanages in Haiti. But she says the situation she was returning to is increasingly dire, with resources disappearing quickly.
We get up in the morning and we get together and decide who's going to go looking for fuel oil. The generator has to be fed and the truck has to be fed. And who's going to be going for food?
She says fear is taking an emotional toll.
We've got so many babies right now that are scared. These children are scared every time they hear a loud noise, and including myself. If I'm laying down at night and I hear a loud noise, I jump up and run out of the house. You know, I'm sleeping in the house that's unsafe, but I have to get some sleep, so.
15 miles outside Port-au-Prince, Haiti Gospel Mission is also scrambling for resources. Despite some property damage, their small medical clinic is still treating injured people, including many who made their way there from the city. They're also trying to help displaced people who are taking refuge in the mission compound. From here in the U.S., Jesse Hales with the mission has been able to get them some food and medical supplies, but not enough to meet all the needs. Hales has set up shop in an RV near Fort Pierce so that he can help coordinate more shipments, as well as teams of volunteers who want to go in. He says there are rising concerns about security, and the chaotic situation makes planning very difficult.
You can't depend on anything right now. It keeps changing by the minute, you know. Every minute get a phone call and we find out something new, and it kind of throws another wrench in the play.
And so many still haven't gotten any help, especially in the hardest hit areas outside of Port-au-Prince. Sharon DeRusine has been desperately trying to get aid to her father and the some 200 people, including 50 children, at his church-run compound.
What's happening now is that we're running out of food. The stores don't have any, and they're tripling their prices. And we tried, I myself kept calling different places, different companies for help, and nobody has covered that area. To know that they're okay, I'm very glad. But to know that they may die of hunger, that's not good.
Meanwhile, pastors are also struggling to meet spiritual needs in the wake of the earthquake.
The bad things that happen. Mm.
This group of Protestant pastors in Fort Lauderdale wrestled over how to help their predominantly Haitian congregations deal with the crisis.
There is nobody that I talk to or that have called me who have not lost close relatives in Haiti. And so it hurts. It hurts a lot.
Reverend Claude Noel believes he's lost his 22-year-old grandson.
He left to go to town just to buy some books 2 hours before the situation happened, and he never came back. And we have not found the body.
Churches are setting up counseling services to help people cope with the loss of loved ones and the loss of so much of their homeland.
Everything is gone. Remember, this is things that people worked hard for years, for 200 years, and you look in 1 minute, just 35 seconds, it's all gone. So deep down, you could call, it hurts us deep down. We are, as a people now, wounded souls.
Many pastors say their congregations are asking theological questions that don't have easy answers.
And they're struggling with this question. There is nothing that's done without God's permission. Why did God allow this to happen?
Churches beyond the Haitian American community are grieving as well.
we realize our radical dependence on the God who alone can overcome the depths of our despair.
St. Patrick's Episcopal Church in Washington, D.C. has had a relationship with Haiti for nearly 30 years. St. Pat's parishioners have gone on short-term mission programs there for decades. They supported a church and a school with a music and arts program. Those were destroyed, and they still don't know what has happened to many of their friends in the area.
I feel very much part of that community as a part of a family. And it's, we don't have any word, and it's very hard. It's very hard.
Despite the overwhelming tragedy, many churches are urging their members to focus on hope.
To know that there is hope beyond the rubbish, there is hope beyond the distractions. Lord will see us through.
Dick Smook of MFI says he's already seen glimpses of that hope in the massive response to the crisis.
The church sometimes is thought of as the walls and the steeple, and the people, that's good, and our comfortable pews, the air conditioning going. But in reality, what we've seen here in the last week is the church. The Christians on the front line. That's where we should be.
Kim, welcome back. What impressed you the most about what those volunteers are doing?
Well, I was impressed by the magnitude of the operations. People from all over the country had gone there to try to be personally involved, and they were working day and night. They were working so hard. They're so concerned about the situation there and trying to do whatever they can, whether it's looking at expiration dates on food that had been donated or sorting and packing things. So it was that kind of grassroots effort that was really interesting to see. Also, just the emotional exhaustion with the Haitian American people, the pastors and churches here, trying to provide comfort for their people while they themselves were grieving from everything that they lost themselves and everything that's still happening in Haiti. People are worried, they're exhausted, and that really came through in all those efforts.
That aid is not nearly as massive as what the governments are doing, but it sounds, from your piece, it sounds as if it was very effective, very efficient.
Well, these are groups that have been working down in Haiti for decades, and they know the people. So it's not just a relief operation. It's helping their friends and their family, and they know that aid, they know where it's going. They know where to fly. They know where to land. They know who to give it to, and they know that when they give it to those people, it's going directly to the suffering, to the people who need it. So it was very efficient, but they just don't have the capacity of the big operations.
Yeah. But do they want to go there?
So many people I talked with are so frustrated to be stuck in South Florida. They're desperate to get down there to help, to see their families, to do what they can. And right now, logistics are just so difficult that they can't do it, but they're still down there in Florida doing what they can from there.
Kim Lawton, many thanks. In other news, in Nigeria, religious violence has left hundreds dead and many houses of worship destroyed. Clashes between Muslims and Christians in the city of Jos erupted through the week. Roving gangs attacked mosques and churches before government forces imposed a curfew. Each side blamed the other for triggering the violence. Observers said the bloodshed is the result of long-standing sectarian tensions in the impoverished region. In this country, thousands of abortion opponents gathered in Washington Friday for the annual March for Life demonstration. It marked the 37th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion across the country. The protesters, many of them from churches and schools, rallied and walked along the National Mall to demand an end to abortion. Also in Washington, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton lifted a controversial travel ban on two prominent Muslim scholars. Tariq Ramadan and Adam Habib had been barred from entering the U.S. because the Bush administration claimed they had connections to terrorist groups. But the academics said they were being discriminated against for their political views. They gained support from many religious and civil liberty groups when Ramadan was unable to accept a tenured teaching position at the University of Notre Dame because of the ban. A new poll on attitudes toward Muslims finds that many Americans acknowledge having prejudice against Muslims and the Islamic faith, even as a majority says it's unfamiliar with Islam. The Gallup poll reports that 43% of respondents admitted to harboring at least some prejudice against Muslims. 53% reported an unfavorable view of Islam, but 63% said they had little or no knowledge of Islam. In many countries, modern ideas can often create sharp tension with ancient religious beliefs and practices. But we have a special report today from India on a middle-class Hindu family that's living comfortably, most of the time, in both worlds. Fred DeSam Lazaro has that story.
India has long lured spiritual tourists from the West as a place to escape the modern world. But over the past two decades, India itself has tightly embraced that modern world, at least in urban areas where the large and growing middle class lives. The Gupta family has seen much prosperity in recent years. They enjoy most of life's material conveniences in their New Delhi home. As is common in Hindu households, this one has an altar. Each day, Bhavana Gupta places a puja or food offering to Lord Krishna, one of Hinduism's most widely worshipped deities. The daily worship habits and rituals have been passed down for generations in this family. For Bhavana and Deepak Gupta, who runs a photo supplies business, these have changed little.
Before anything else, I pray. Then I go every day to the temple before eating anything. I first go there, pray over there, then I have breakfast.
I have the same routine. I get ready, then go to temple. We pray to be shielded from all of life's problems, for marriages, for children, in business decisions. Everything we do is after invoking the blessings.
There are regular prayers in the home, shared with their three children and his mother in India's joint family tradition. The Guptas, however, do worry about the growing influences on their children from the ubiquitous advertising on billboards, on the internet, on television. Influences that they say are already altering the traditionally rigid and hierarchical parent-child relationship.
They don't listen to their parents. A few years ago, children used to fear their parents.
They treat us more like friends now. They argue with us.
All the designer labels are coming to India. We used to get slippers for 20 rupees. Now they want 600 rupee brand name ones.
It's exactly that kind of angst that may be driving the market for a media antidote, religious-based satellite television channels. Pramod Joshi leads one of several such enterprises called Ashta, which means faith or devotion.
The mission of the Ashta channel is to take the Indian culture, the Indian heritage, the socio-spiritual culture of the India to the world.
Ashta provides round-the-clock programming, a variety of preachers from Hinduism and closely related South Asian traditions, like Sikhism and Jainism. They invoke the ancient scriptures, conduct meditation and yoga, and programs reminiscent of evangelical Protestant tent revivals. Most of these gurus pay to get on the channel.
How many people do you think you reach?
I think in India we reach to at least 250 million viewers.
250 million viewers?
Yeah.
The huge market has lured advertisers, and Asta's stock has performed well on the Bombay Exchange. As editors and producers package Asta's content, the goal is to distinguish it from the commercial Hollywood and Bollywood-inspired fare on other channels.
There are programs which show a lot of divorce or extramarital affairs and things like that, but that's actually not a fact in India. So our network, on the contrary, is actually showing you, okay, this is India. This is the religion, this is our values, these are our values, and this is how we live.
India is a tradition-bound, generally conservative society, but exactly what religion is has never really been clearly defined, says sociologist Ashish Nandi.
Though we call Hinduism
Islam, Buddhism, Sikhism, religions, in South Asia at least, and I would suspect even in East Asia, they were not religious in the Western sense. There is no word in any Indian language which is a synonym of religion.
Instead, Nandi says religious practice is localized and individualized in India, particularly in the predominant Hinduism, which has no centralized leadership. Hindus profess faith in one creator, Brahma, as part of a trinity with Vishnu, the protector, and Shiva, the destroyer of evil, shown in this Asta Channel animation. They are manifest in countless deities and forms. People can and often do choose a personal god or gods informed by family or village traditions, personal experience, or even word of mouth. The pantheon can sometimes transcend what to Westerners might seem firmly drawn lines between religious faiths.
A friend of mine did a survey. According to census, only 1% of the citizens of Chennai are Christian. He asked them, "Who is your personal god?" And 10% said Jesus Christ was their personal god. 1% Christian, 10% have Jesus Christ as a personal god. They don't see any contradiction in it. And that's the way religion is.
Gradually, he says, technology, mostly the internet and television, may help forge a sharper sense of religious identity.
Traditionally, the South Asian faiths depended not on belief systems, like modern Christianity does, but on religious practices. What you did was important, not what you believed in. Nobody asked you, do you really believe in Krishna? Do you really believe in Ram? I suspect that, like the Channel Astha, the modern versions of faith will gradually begin to make inroads into the culture of religion in this society.
Back in the Gupta household, the religion channels are on regularly, though only one member, the matriarch, pays much attention to what for her is a service that brings the temple and age-old traditions into her home.
We have a deal. There are certain times I will watch my religious programs. When they're over, they are relieved. Now they can have the TV.
Her granddaughters, Siddhi and Riddhi Gupta, however, will have little to do with channels like Asta.
Do you ever watch any of the religion channels? Neither of you? Okay, why not?
At times it's okay watching religious channels. I'm not a TV watcher. I just watch English movies, and that's also really rare.
For their part, parents Deepak and Bhavana Gupta may worry about children arguing too much, about unhealthy outside influences, yet they enjoy the upside, a new intellectual engagement with their two teenage daughters. One example, the children question the Hindu practice of paying priests to perform prayer services for their intentions, akin to a Roman Catholic tradition of paying a priest to say masses.
They're more practical in their approach.
We think we're going to the temple. Let's give the priest 500 rupees to have him do a good prayer service for us. Now the younger generation, they ask, why?
I don't think that's the way to show God that you believe in him. God doesn't want us to give money. He actually wants us to do something in the way. Why don't we give that money for charity and stuff? Like, there are millions of programs, NGOs going on to save child labor.
Sometimes I really feel proud of my elder daughter. I know in myself she is right.
There may be clashes over material goods and acquisitions, like all middle-class teenagers have with parents, but this family sees no clash between modernity and Hinduism, which they say is inherently eclectic and tolerant. The next generation won't abandon Hindu traditions, they say, but rather tailor them to meet their own individual needs. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSamlazaro in New Delhi.
In Rome, Pope Benedict XVI visited the city's main synagogue. Benedict met with Jewish leaders and Holocaust survivors. He spoke of the importance of the two faiths working to, quote, unite our hearts. Catholic and Jewish leaders said the visit should help ease tensions between the Vatican and Jews. The Anti-Defamation League said it affirmed the Catholic-Jewish relationship. On our calendar, the Jewish holiday of Tu B'Shvat begins at sundown next Friday. It's called the New Year for Trees and has become a special day for efforts to protect the environment. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. Our coverage of the aftermath of the Haiti earthquake continues on our website. You'll find more of our interviews about Haiti as well as information on how to help. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, Jean-Luc Princeville singing a traditional Haitian song during communion at a service to pray for Haiti at St. Patrick's Episcopal Church in Washington, D.C.